Man, opening up with a deep track from the Eagles. I mean, this is a song, I don't even know if we've ever played it on Sports Talk. I like that. I like when we give you something that you never hear, unless you're listening to KLAQ2, where this is probably in somewhat of a rotation. But yeah, you talk about a deep track, Too Many Hands from the Eagles getting us going here on a Friday afternoon. I like that. He's Adrian Broaddus. I'm Steve Kaplowitz. Alberto Urueta is with us as well. Happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday.
Man, look at that UTEP softball team. They have taken, it's almost like this is the, like for the last 3 or 4 years of frustration, now they've channeled it all into probably the best start ever. I mean, they knocked off Texas Tech. They nearly did it to Arizona State last week. They've been playing terrific. What a difference pitching can make.
Yeah, the pitching really changes things for them. Right now in this one, they're up 3 against Texas State. And, you know, Taja Felder, she's had 8 batters faced, and has walked 2 of them, has only struck out 1, but she has the shutout so far, and that really does change things. You can go out and beat Power 5 schools, and you know, they got whooped last year. They hosted some good competition early in last season, and that, I think, toughened them up, and I think getting a win against a Power 5 school here is really what has helped them out.
I agree. You doing okay there?
Alberto? Yeah, I was shaky at the start. I didn't want to pull on the mic.
I don't know what you were doing. I was, you know what? Anytime, like, I mean, I'm just thinking that mustache is taking over, man. It's like owning you now. I mean, that stash has grown in so well. I almost feel like, it's now dictating what you say, how you say it, when things start to come out of your mouth. Basically, your mustache is running. It's running your show. You realize that, right?
Yeah, it is. It's got a life of its own right now.
It does, man. Have you named him yet?
I have no control. No, I haven't named him.
Like, if you had to, like, just out of curiosity, if you had to name your mustache, what do you think? Like, you would want to refer to your mustache as? Like, you know, people have different names for everything on their body. What would you call your mustache?
That's a hard one. I'd have to think about that.
Adrian, any tips for Alberto on how he can name that stash that pretty much now has grown in? Like, that is a very impressive, well-established addition to Mr. Urueta's facial features. And now the question is, you know, what is he going to call it?
You know, it's a great question, Steve. I think that you have to draw inspiration from other great mustaches as well. Mm-hmm. Maybe you throw a little Baker Mayfield. I feel like it's got a little Baker in him. Baker always changes up his facial hair, though, so it's not like Baker today. But, yeah, I would say that there's a lot of different names that you could throw out there for people who have this kind of style mustache.
Yeah, I mean, let's put it this way. It is a solid, solid mustache. I like it. And, you know, I just so curious now to see, based on, you know, what he has, how that thing is going to, you know, what's going to happen and what he's going to name it. I mean, a lot of good possibilities, don't you think?
Yeah, I definitely do. There's some good ones. I think we can get some good, you know, some suggestions from the listeners, too.
Yeah, I do, too. I mean, you tell me, when you look at it, what do you think? Is it? What would you say? Is it? It's not. It's grown thicker than the pencil mustache. It really has. It's. I mean, I don't know, man. Some people call it. There's actually a name, a chevron mustache. Did you know that?
Oh, I like that. The chevron. I like that. What
chevron,
do you think?
That's a good one.
Yeah. It is. Look, it follows the shape of the upper lip, resulting in a natural mustache that has a slight upside down V shape. What do you think? Would you say that that's what he's got?
Yeah, I would say that's what he's got. You could call it the Chevy, maybe, you know, something like that.
The Chevy. All right. I like that. That's not bad, man. That is not bad. Well, listen, regardless, it's good to have you and your mustache back in our studios today. I appreciate that, Alberto. And, you know, it's always tough when you get, you know, thrust into the show right out of the gate. Adrian just kind of put you on the air.
Yeah,
when
I apologize
when we were,
back here. I mean, I was like, that's on me.
I was kind of setting you up for UTEP softball. Then all of a sudden, you're throwing Alberto up. He couldn't complete a sentence to start the conversation. And then he got warmed up again and got going. And again, I blame the stash. Anytime there's anything that happens with Alberto, I am always going to put it on the mustache. That's Alberto. It's the easiest way. It's the easiest scapegoat you've got now. So if anything ever happens that, you know, isn't up to perfection for you, just blame it on the mustache.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. I'm just gonna be like, oh, the mustache. And you know, talking more, a little more UTEP softball, right now in this one, they're up three, like I said, and they have Autumn Scott, Hallie Hogan, Asia Richard, and Idalis Mendez. They all have one hit in their first at-bat here, so they kind of got hot. That's how they scored three. And they're really getting going on both sides of the ball.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, listen, I'm happy for the softball team. I hope they hold on and beat Texas State. You got to be, listen, you already beat Texas Tech. Now you got to finish the job and just take care of Texas State. And then it has been a successful first day for UTEP. They'll win this thing when it's all said and done. That's the kind of softball they're playing right now.
Yeah, and this is a really tough time, you know, off the field, Steve. It was, you know, this was actually made public earlier in the week, and for those who don't know, TJ Hubbard's wife is going through battling a serious disease right now. Yep. She was admitted, I believe, a couple weeks ago, middle of February, to MD Anderson. So she has been in some kind of recovery right now. She's going through a lot off the field. The whole family's going through a lot off the field. And so for the Hubbard family, you know, our prayers out to them, and for this team to have success and to rally around the season and everything that's going on. I mean, it's pretty remarkable and what they've been able to do so far on the year.
It's amazing. You're right. Maybe they're all rallying together for TJ. That could be what it is right now because of the situation that, you know, has involved his wife. And I saw Jim Center post a link to the GoFundMe earlier this week. And, yeah, it's been really, really tough, tough news. And, look, they've got young kids. So, you know, that is you just hope for the best. That's all you can say is you hope for the best.
No doubt about it. And, you know, another thing, Steve, to keep it on a positive note, this softball team is doing something that a lot of people counted them out and thought that they couldn't do under this coaching staff. And, you know, this coaching staff has struggled in the past couple years, but it feels like this year is different. They've shown what they can do at home against quality opponents like New Mexico.
Yep.
They've shown what they could do against Power 5 opponents like Texas Tech.
Right.
And they have a chance to sweep today. So I like the fight that they're showing early on into the season.
I'll be perfectly honest with you, okay? And this is the honest to God truth. I was shocked that TJ Hubbard survived after last season. I thought for sure he was out as softball coach, but they hung in there. They gave him one more year, and so far you've already seen really the results, and it's been terrific. What a great start for them, and can't wait to see what they do in conference as they continue to play so well in the non-conference action. So it's a good place for us to start here on the show today. Meanwhile, and by the way, this came from Adolfo, who said, Alberto does a great job calling UTEP softball. How about that? Adolfo giving you props.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
There it is. I like that. Good answer. That's all you have to say. It's perfect. Anyway, we got a lot to cover. We just found out Lane Frank will drop by probably about 5:15 right after Track Talk.
Nice.
We might only have one segment with Lane today. Might be a quick day today with Lane, but that's okay. He wants to get in. I'm excited about that. So Lane's going to drop in on the show here next hour. We've got Track Talk, as we mentioned, with Eric Alwyn. We'll do that at 5. Then we have, coming up at 6, we're going to meet a new member of El Paso Locomotive FC. So that's also in store for you. So we'll have a big second and third hour on the show, getting you ready for the weekend. But let's begin with the big news, all right? I know we talked about softball to begin and Alberto's mustache, which, by the way, the stash is done for the show. That mustache has gotten enough publicity. He doesn't need any more exposure than he's already gotten. So we're finished with that. But the men won a road game yesterday. This is a big story. And by the way, thank you, Trey. Trey promoting on Twitter and X that Minor Talk is the best show on radio. I agree. I've been saying it for years. And Minor Talk, including this one, I think Minor Talk is the best thing we've got going on this radio station. I love it. Love the fact that you can react instantly. I love the fact that even though we didn't have a single caller yesterday after their first road win of the season, there was enough activity on social media to power the show for a good amount of time after the Miners took care of business yesterday on the road and won their first road game of the season against Jacksonville State.
Yeah, and it's something to be excited about if you're a UTEP fan, but with context, all right? So let me say this, and let me be very clear, because some people were calling me today saying, wow, UTEP, you think UTEP's turned the corner? That's what you were saying, Lott. No. My feelings on this team have not really changed. The fact that they snapped a four-game win streak, just celebrate that. Celebrate the fact that they won a road game, which I counted them out on doing this season.
Yep.
I thought they were done on the road. They were going to lose this game. They were going to lose against Liberty. I still think they'll lose to the Flames. But when you have a performance like that from Derek Hamilton, who battled sickness, and head coach Joe Golding after the game said that he was puking post-game and had to have an IV in him, which is disgusting in itself. Otis Frazier the third with a career night, 24.7 steals. He's got 65 steals on the season, which is pretty remarkable in itself. And then David Terrell emerging in the second half, 0 points in the first, looked a little shaky, scores all his 11 in the second half, and was playing legitimate real minutes for this team when they really needed it. So, you could be happy for this team to finally get a road win, which, like Joe Golding said yesterday, this team's pretty resilient. They don't let a lot faze them, even though they might not be as talented or as good as some of their other opponents that they're facing.
They've been in every road game. The only difference was last night they finished. I mean, they haven't finished all season. They've been in almost all of them. You think about it. This team doesn't get blown out on the road. This team is usually right there in the final minutes of every road game, with the exception of one or two that we've seen so far. So, you know what? I'm happy they found a way to win on the road. Do I expect them to win tomorrow against Liberty on the road? Nope. But you know what? I didn't even know if they were going to win last night, and they came back and played tough. So, they can show up. They can show up, and if they come with momentum coming off the win last night, they can absolutely play Liberty tough all the way through for 40 minutes tomorrow.
They can. And, I loved how this team responded at the 8-minute mark, because I thought it was real tight all the way through the end of the game. In fact, at 1 minute, 104, at the 104 mark, it was just a 3-point game. Jacksonville State had sunk some free throws, 68-65. There was also an error by the Miners at that point, but they were able to get a layup from Tay Hardy, which was clutch. It was a timeout by the team. They rallied around it. And then it was the steal and score difference maker by Otis Frazier III that really set this team over the top late in the game. So you have your team, your player who's led you in scoring all season long in Tay Hardy, who hit a great layup, and you had your best player on the floor in Otis Frazier III making the biggest play of the night with that steal and layup. So really like that late game closeout by the Miners. And is it something you could build upon? Sure. It gives them confidence, yes, but does it change the course of their season? I don't really think so.
I don't either. But you want to know something? All the tournament games are going to be neutral site games, so who knows? I mean, do I think UTEP's going to come and be ready to put? No, but you never know. Anything's possible. All right. Anyway. Interesting. All right. We found out just a moment ago. All right. Breaking news. Lane Frank's tennis coach is making him stay longer than he anticipated. He will not be able to come by today.
It's all good, man. Zay Galindo on this show has not been able to join because of practice with track.
Yep.
He's been in the season. Same with Lane Frank. He's in tennis season. They're both in the thick of it. Alberto and I were just talking about it off air. We were saying this age, when you're a sophomore, junior, senior in high school, you get real busy at times. So, you know what? I give him a pass here today. Do you give him a pass?
Yeah, of course. Of course. And listen, the truth is this. Academics and athletics comes first. It does.
That's right.
So, Lane is a sophomore. He's already on the varsity tennis team. I don't want him ticking off his coach just to show up for a quick spot in the 5 o'clock hour. I want to make sure that he stays on that tennis team and doesn't do anything to upset the apple cart. Even though I would like to get his Coronado tennis coach on the show one of these days and explain to him what he has in Lane Frank, because I don't really know if his tennis coach has any idea what Lane does when he's not playing for Coronado.
Yeah, we need to have more guests like that with Lane. The people to just kind of get that, the information, the 411. This guy really knows the sports.
He does. He really does. So anyway, we'll do track talk at 5. We'll have the rest of the hour open, and then we'll do a little locomotive at 6, which gives us a chance to spend more time talking to you. In fact, I have three pairs of tickets left for tonight's Ring Wars 9 coming up at the Coliseum. Now, here's the catch. Our office closes in less than an hour, 5 o'clock. So if you can get to our radio station at 4180 North Mesa before 5 o'clock, I will give you a pair of boxing tickets. And we have three pair left to go. So the first three callers in at 505-6009 that can get here before 5, I've got tickets for you for tonight's show. That's the first three callers that get into the show, 505-6009, and can make it to this radio station the next 42 minutes. You're going to see Ring Wars 9, courtesy of 600 ESPN El Paso. So let's see if we can get some calls. In the meantime, let's go to Charlie 1, get our first traffic update. Great to have you aboard here on a Friday. Adrian, thank you very much. Let's get right to the calls and start it off today with Cruz, who's first up. Hey, Cruz, what's going on? How are you?
Not much, but I'm doing okay. Hey, I was wanted to call in yesterday, but it was such a short program. I thought you.
Well, hang on. Stop. All right, listen. You said you wanted to call in, but it was a short program. Are you talking about sports talk or minor talk?
At this time, I was going to call in.
It was a very short program. It was only 30 minutes. I thought you meant minor talk last night that you wanted to call
no,
in,
no.
But that was a short show. How long did minor talk go?
Just we went like an hour.
An hour?
Yeah.
Still a good amount of time. Cruz, have you ever listened to minor talk after UTEP games?
Sometimes I do, but, you know, I live alone, and I get to where I have things I got to do, and I got this eye problem waiting to get it, so I'm kind of slow at things. But, yeah, I do listen to it some of the time.
All right, man. I got you. Well, yeah, we're only on for half an hour yesterday. You're 100% right. Our 30-minute shows, it's almost impossible to get in on, and then we spend much of the time with John Teicher. So I get you. But go ahead. You got in now. That's all that matters, Cruz. What do you have for us?
Yeah. I thought that UTEP would win the game because they matched up pretty well against them the last time. They were ahead with almost all the game or the entire game. I thought they had a pretty good chance. And, I want to say, it's been a bad season, but I want to thank the UTEP basketball team, especially the senior supporters, their loyalty, for coming to El Paso to represent us and to try their best, do their best. We can't get any group of people in El Paso who would have done as well as this team has done for us, and we should appreciate them a little more. Especially our seniors, as they move on, if they apply themselves this way at what they decide to do, I think that they will be successful. And once again, I want to thank them. I hope we can keep as many of these guys that are there, I don't know how many, but hopefully most of them. And we do appreciate it. Everywhere they go from now on, they will have a piece of us with them, and we will have a piece of them with us too. And I want to thank them, especially, like I said, the seniors for their loyalty.
Yep. Good good answer there. Good. All right. I appreciate that. Anything else you want to do besides thanking the seniors today, Cruz?
Well, I did, but I can't remember it right off. I just got off the phone with the retirement company, with the union and all that, and it just kind of made me forget some of it. But I'll call back and say some of the rest, next week or so, if I can remember it.
Hey, I hear you. Listen, take care of yourself, and hey, thanks for the phone call, all right? We'll talk to you later.
Thank you, buddy. Be careful. Bye-bye. Right,
you too. Good stuff. Crew's getting in as we continue. 38 past the hour. 505-6009. Our telephone number as we continue. We really didn't have much of a show yesterday. Do we?
Right.
Does 30 minutes even count as a show?
It's just like the pre-show. The pre-show before the pre-game, right?
Do we? Would you call that like the pre-pre-show?
Yeah, the pre-pre-show. Yeah. I still like that. I like it. The pre-show before the pre-game show. How about that?
The pre-show before the pre-game show. Got it. It's so confusing, isn't it?
Very confusing. But, hey, we got it done yesterday. And, hey, you know, to the UTEP team yesterday with that win, I mean, what does it do for them? It gives them a little bit of confidence going into that Liberty game. But I think Liberty's just a bad matchup. They've got all those undersized guards. That's who everybody's going to see tomorrow. It's a 5 o'clock tip-off, so just remember that as well. And then they've got, you know, a smaller lineup bunch. So if they go with Otis Frazier at the 5 during stretches, I think that's probably the best method against this team. Although I do like – I hope that Derek Hamilton's feeling a little bit better from puking all day yesterday, so then he can be thrown into the mix as well.
You got listen, if Hamilton's not, you know, sick, you got to play him. Liberty would have such a difficult time trying to figure out how to stop him down low. They're undersized. They don't have guys that can – they can't stop Derek Hamilton. Now, on the flip side, Derek Hamilton probably couldn't stop them on the other side of the ball. But, yeah, I would figure that that could be an interesting little storyline against Liberty, giving Hamilton a chance to play.
I think it's easier said than done, though. I think that, you know, just saying that he's going to push past them just because of his size is tough because they go zone in stretches. That's what really killed UTEP in that first matchup against Liberty. So I just want to see how Hamilton is against a zone defense. He's proven that when you put a man against him, go man-to-man, he can get through him. Yesterday, Jacksonville State did throw some zone against UTEP, and he did go through him. So let's see what he could do against this Liberty team. I love him off the bench, and I love how he's so efficient offensively, Steve. That's one of the things that is basically his strength, Derek Hamilton, his efficiency whenever he scores.
Hamilton's probably the one big guy that if you throw a zone at him, he's still going to find a way to beat you, because even if you try to double him down low, he'll just power right through you and get the ball in. I mean, that's just what he does. He plays that low post power game and can finish around the basket.
So how do you explain the lack of minutes? Because I can't explain it. That was me right there. Listen, trying to explain the lack of minutes he's getting.
The only thing I could figure out was they felt like he didn't play enough defense and couldn't get back in time. That would be the only thing.
Yeah.
Because that's right. The same thing with Elijah Jones. It's like you ask, why isn't Elijah Jones playing? We're like, well, because teams adjusted to him and he plays no defense. And I'm like, all right, fine, I'll give you that. But I mean, Derek Hamilton, every time he's on the court, he scores.
Right. So
he's the human basket.
I'll take a negative. I'll take a deficit defensively if you get the pluses on offense where they struggle.
Yes,
I mean,
exactly.
Is this just common sense to us? What are we not seeing?
And not only that, when you've got a guy like that that can score down low, it changes your perimeter game because now you're not having to press so much because they've got to focus down low on stopping the big man, and suddenly you get wide open looks from everywhere.
So if it's so simple like this, then I just don't understand why he doesn't at least average like 15 minutes during these final couple games.
I don't know.
You know, off the bench. Yesterday, I get it. He's sick. He's puking his guts out, I guess, after the game or whatever. But
maybe he can't handle like more than 2 or 3 minutes at a time without getting tired and winded.
Yeah, I mean, then that, to me, that's more of a situational thing. Should have played all season long, so he would have been ready here for this final stretch of the season. But on the flip side, it's up to the player to get themselves into shape. It's up to them to be in prime conditioning at this point of the season when you need it most. This is the most important time of the season.
Yeah, that's very true. And you know what? If you don't, I mean, I know he lost like 20 pounds, but now don't you almost feel like he gained it all back? Like when you watch him on the court, does he really seem any lighter now than he did last year?
I'll say he's smoother. I don't think lighter. I think he's probably the same body type as he was last year. So did he, you know, change that much? I don't know. But as far as his touch goes offensively, he looks more comfortable. He looks smoother.
I would say that's true. I do agree with that. But yeah, that's one of those mysteries. I don't know. Maybe on Monday we can ask Joe and have him explain to us where Derek Hamilton's been all season and why all of a sudden now are they putting him in. Maybe he's got a good answer for us. I don't know.
You know, and maybe they're not getting much from their other two bigs in Solomon and Kalu. And maybe behind the scenes, that's just the simple answer. Hey, you got to go to your bench to see what you've got. Dos Anjos has gotten a lot of minutes these past couple weeks, so that's part of it as well.
42 past. We'll come back, wrap up hour one. Still to come, Track Talk to lead up our 5 o'clock hour, and then Locomotive FC at 6. We continue 600 ESPN El Paso. A little X-1 for you off their latest Return of the Night Mouse. You're hearing it first here on Sports Talk. I like it. Like it a lot. It does have a Sports Talk kind of groove to it when it gets started, doesn't it?
It does. I really like this song. It's fresh. feels modern. It feels like, they have so many different sounds. X minus one, you never know what you're going to really get. And this one right here was really upbeat. It was fiery. I like it. I really like it. I think this is an hour opener right here.
I love it. Good stuff. The boys will be happy, that's for sure, as we continue here on the program, 9 in front of 5. We've got Track Talk coming up here in 10 minutes with Eric Alwyn, the voice of Sunland Park Racetrack and Casino. I started to see this. There's a lot of NFL releases that have been happening. A lot of big names have been getting released, too. In fact, the latest big one is what happened with the Patriots. They released J.C. Jackson, and now with the cornerback being given his walking papers, they have freed up apparently about $100 million now for their rebuild. And that's a lot of money, $100 million in cap space. Now, I think 13.5 is what the Jackson release gave the Patriots, but they're trying to be a player during free agency.
Yeah, they are, and they've got a lot of free agents who are also on their radar or who are probably leaving their team, like Ezekiel Elliott. He's also in the mix. He's somebody who's probably leaving their team as well. And so you look at this New England team, it's a hard reset. My question is, Steve, do they draft a quarterback? Do they get aggressive and start packaging things so they can move up in the draft, or do they trade for somebody who's possibly available on the market right now? Maybe a Justin Fields. Maybe they trade and buy, or throw the kitchen sink at somebody like Derek Carr. And when I say kitchen sink, maybe just a fifth rounder or something like that, just to be a part of that rebuild. But the top three quarterbacks right now, it's Caleb Williams out of USC, it's Drake May out of UNC, North Carolina, and it's, of course, Jaden Daniels out of LSU. So let's see what happens.
Do you have concern with Williams and all the, first off, he wouldn't even disclose his medicals at the NFL Combine. He's the first player in the history of the Combine that didn't do that. I don't know. There's just a weird vibe with him, don't you think? And I don't know if I would just take him number one overall like a lot of teams have been talking about.
So I'm all in on Caleb Williams. I am all in on him being number one, and I'm all in on the Bears taking him number one. I'm in.
I don't know. I mean,
what is it, attitude that's worrying?
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot to unpack there. There really is. There's, besides just the medicals, there is the attitude situation, and I don't know. I don't feel as good about it as I should. He's been the number one pick all year, and for some reason, there's just something about it that I'm not feeling as great with Caleb Williams. And none of those quarterbacks, by the way, I don't necessarily know if any of them, Daniels, May, I don't know if there's any slam dunks in this year's draft class.
Yeah, I was saying this earlier this week. I think the number of busts, it used to be 50-50, and now it's starting to be 60% busts, 40% actually pan out and have success out of the guys you get drafted in the first round. But you don't draft because necessarily they're going to change the franchise. They're going to necessarily come on right away and be successful. You draft quarterbacks early in the draft because you hope to get them on that rookie contract. Look at the Texans right now. They've got CJ Stroud under wraps. They don't have to pay him crazy money like Patrick Mahomes, who's making $50 million plus every single year, so you have to be strategic on what you do in salary cap reasons. But with the Texans, they can load up this offseason. So what I'm saying is you just get a restart right here with Caleb Williams at number one with the Bears. Forget the player right there. The contract makes it worth it, and now you could build around that with a guy on a rookie deal.
I mean, I'm looking right now, and Williams, it could be Williams, Daniels, and May going 1-2-3 to the Bears, Commanders, and Pats.
Wow. See, the Daniels moving up over May is real interesting to me.
It is. We'll talk more about that later in the show, but as promised, Track Talk coming up next with Eric Alwyn, and then right back to more of your calls as Sports Talk continues. It's 600 ESPN El Paso. Welcome Welcome back, everybody, to another edition here on Track Talk. I'm Steve Kaplowitz, joined, as always, by the voice of Summer Park Racetrack and Casino. He is Eric Alwyn. Eric, I can't believe that we're really in the home stretch of live racing. It seems like it was just yesterday we started off the season, and now here we are, what, 6 weekends left to go before the racing season comes to a close.
Yeah, it seems faster than most seasons, maybe because we have the Sunland Derby so early, but the stakes races keep reeling off each and every weekend, and it's all going to be, you know, closing on Sunday, April the 7th. And after Dustin's work of reshuffling the deck of cards, so to speak, closing weekend's going to be a lot more exciting than normal. And I got to tell you, Steve, after being in this game for 50 years, I saw something that I never thought I'd see last Saturday when we watched the Saudi Cup.
Tell me about it.
Simulcast. Well, Todd Fincher had a horse in it, one of our very own horses, Senior Buscador, who happened to win the Curubo Stakes last year here. And it's a horse from that same family tree of Runaway Ghost and so many others, Sheriff Brown. A lot of great horses have been thrown out of the Mare Rose's Desert. And Senior Buscador is the latest one. And he's been picking off races kind of left and right, or being second or third in major races throughout the country. And is before last Saturday, he was second in the World Cup race at Gulfstream Park. So he was no longer really considered a long shot anymore. But when they took him to Saudi to run, you know, in Saudi Arabia, I think he went off at about 13-1. And he was going against horses that had won the Breeders' Cup Classic and had been, you know, major threats in the Derby last year. In other words, the best horses in the world. And he beat them. He came from far back and won by a nose without any, you know, argument at all. It's the finest horse achievement, finest trainer achievement from anyone from here ever, because of the amount of money involved. $20 million, the world's richest quarter horse, I mean, the world's richest thoroughbred race, or any race, for any breed. And to have our own Todd Fincher win it, I think really caps off the success of the Sunland Park story. You know, when we started adding money from the gaming, you know, proceeds and putting it into the racing business, wow, to see what it's done. I mean, it really worked. It really worked.
I think it's important also to note that even though we always talk about the Sunland Derby and the Kentucky Derby, there are plenty of great stakes races around the country and around the world that Sunland horses do very well in. And this one, clearly, I mean, we talk Mind That Bird, and that'll go down in history and always will be remembered. But this race, knowing the purse, knowing the amount of money that's on the line and the prestige, again, another feather in the cap of not only Todd Fincher, but Sunland Park, to show everybody that, hey, there are plenty of huge races worldwide, and we can always have a Sunland horse be a storyline just like this.
I guess so. And it's all because of money. You know, the amount of money the gaming our casinos put into our racing product has just been enormous, and it has yielded fruit. It's been so fertile. And to win that race for a Sunland Park horse out of a New Mexico bred mare, Steve, I mean, that's another thing. And now, of course, she's throwing all these Kentucky breds because she's being, you know, bred to Mineshaft and Gunrunner and the likes. I mean, so she's, Rose's Desert really isn't a New Mexico bred anymore, but she once was, and she won races here. So it's one of the greatest stories of a locally raised, locally bred, locally born runner. And I'm sure that the Peacocks are so happy. Joe Peacock Jr. is now the owner. And there was such interest in this horse, Steve, that a couple of rich Saudis anteed up $800,000 leasing a small portion of Senior Buscador for that Saudi Cup and the Dubai World Cup. I think after what Senior Buscador did, he's already got him out of the $800,000 part. So whatever he makes in this Dubai race, these owners are going to make some money on their gamble, but they're not going to own the horse. It's just a two race leasing situation, something that I've never seen before, where owners just come in for a, you know, a designated target of two races, and then the horse comes through. It's amazing, because the owners made $10 million. Joe Peacock made $10 million.
Can you imagine that? Can you imagine being an owner and coming away $10 million richer because of one horse race? That
one,
is, I mean,
one effort.
Okay, so you tell me, if you win the Kentucky Derby, how much money is that worth to the owner of the horse?
I think $1.5 million, $1.6 million.
Yeah.
Now, however, there's all the stuff that, you know, precipitates it.
Sure.
The glory, the prestige, a colt that wins the Derby. Yeah. There's going to be millions of dollars down the line for breeding. There's that. But in one race for liquidity, no. That Saudi Cup is, you know, it's the number one race. I think the Dubai World Cup that he's going to run in next is worth a paltry $10 million, Steve. Just $10
million. Man. So, so I guess for Todd Fincher, okay, let's talk about Fincher for a second. I know he's having a solid meet here at Sunland, but all of a sudden – does he become now a bigger national commodity and worldwide commodity with the ability to win this race as a trainer?
Three words: you damned right. And he's a good marketeer too, Steve. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to parlay this into big stuff.
Yeah.
He's already got a lot of new owners, and I can see a day where Todd might not be here presently all the time anymore. He'll always have his, you know, his division of New Mexico breeds. But Todd Fincher is destined for places like Oaklawn Park, Keeneland, Churchill Downs. And now you've got a worldwide audience, which you just hinted at, that saw what he can do. And it's not like it's just one race that he won. Todd's taken this horse everywhere. He's won at Del Mar. He won at Churchill a couple of years ago. He stakes placed at Gulfstream, and he just keeps on coming. And he's one of the greatest closers that I've ever seen. He must have made up about 12 lengths to win that race at Saudi the other day. So it's just obvious that Todd has done a great job. And he's a young man.
Yeah.
He's your age. He's in his, I think he's in his late 40s or maybe just turned 50. And he was a former jockey. So he knows so much about the racing game.
He could be the next Steve Asmussen when you really start to look at it.
Maybe, although he's getting a later start as far as national stuff, but he could certainly be in that dance.
Yeah, that's awesome. That is awesome. Yeah. Eric Owen joining us here on Track Talk as we continue. By the way, how old is Senor Buscador?
Gosh, that's a good question. I think he's about 5 or 6, okay? And he's not a gelding, Steve. He's not a gelding. He's a stallion.
Yeah.
He's worth a ton. And I don't think he's going to be breeding in New Mexico.
I believe
so good that they'll probably just stand him in Kentucky, I would imagine. And for a, you know, in a world where stamina is questioned in American racing, here's a stud that's going to love throwing babies that can go a mile and eighth, a mile and a quarter, maybe even a mile and a half.
Amazing. Now, let's transition to this weekend. We've got the Grade 3 West Texas Derby coming up for quarter horses on Saturday. Then we've got the Sunburst Stakes on Sunday. So a pair of big stakes races happening this weekend here at Sunland Park Racetrack.
You know, Steve, the West Texas Derby is really a betting challenge. So many good ones in there. They're not the elite, world-class Grade 1 types, but they're hard-knocking types. Three-year-olds, horses that have shown some ability in stakes. I'm a little partial to the rail horse, a horse called One Little Liar. This horse won a race that I called at Sunray Park last year called the Four Corners Futurity, and he's going to go up against another rival of his from that race in Tempting Barbie. Tempting Barbie is going to be in the three hole, and it's ironic that these two horses are fresh. They haven't been overrun yet. And they might be better three-year-olds than they were two-year-olds. And One Little Liar is trained by one of my favorite trainers here at Sunland among thoroughbreds, Andres Gonzalez. He was second in one of our stakes races on Sunland Derby Day. I think it was the Bill Thomas with Loca Luna. He makes horses better. I don't care what they are, quarter horses or thoroughbreds. And he made One Little Liar better enough to win his trial and be the top qualifier. But Tempting Barbie is going to be bearing down on him. Marco Flores is his trainer. Wes Giles has a good one in the race called Moe's. He was a trial winner. So it's a deep, deep race. They gelded Bacardi a couple months ago, and he improved. And he was within a neck of One Little Liar in the trial. So there's not a lot separating the top bunch in the West Texas Derby.
How about the Sunburst Stakes on Sunday? That's going to be a 350-yard sprint compared to the 400-yard sprint for the Derby on Saturday.
Kind of looks like it dovetails well for the Shoe Fly winner, which was over the edge. And this horse beat the best horses that day. Pretty much we're talking about the same kind of runners, maybe easier, because this race is restricted to just fillies. So I like her even more, especially at 4-1. Once again, trainers are the main angle to winning money in horse racing. Whether you're a gambler, an owner, and Eric Valenzuela has proven for the last 5 years that he is a go-to trainer in stakes races. If Over the Edge does not win, maybe Sweetest Emotion could. Sweetest Emotion was about this far behind Over the Edge in the Shoe Fly, about a neck behind. So she's really in the conversation, and her trainer is James J. Gonzalez III. How many times have we spoken about, you know, how good a trainer that young man is? So with those two horses, I think you have the key to the race.
I'm excited about it, as always. Good stuff, Eric, giving us tips.
And thank you, Steve.
And then before you know it, next Friday, so March 8th, then we've got the Curbo and the Albert and Henry Dominguez Memorial. So, and that's going to be a fun day for thoroughbred racing fans.
Hopefully the Curbo will fill. The Winsome Lad did not. We're kind of, you know, crossing our fingers on that. It's been so hard to get open races to fill. You know, non-New Mexico bred types. Oh, I'm sure the Albert and Henry Dominguez will fill with 12 because that race is restricted to New Mexico bred thoroughbreds. But we're coming down to the, you know, the key part of the season with a lot of season-ending championship races. Big news with the West Texas Futurity. The trials that day that we have for it could have as many as 17, wow. 18 trials in one day. And that's on March 17th. And I'll keep you posted as to what happens there.
Look forward
to
it.
That would be a record, by the way.
Oh, my God. I'd never heard anything like that before. That is unheard of around here. So
it's unheard of. Yeah. That's like Ruidoso does. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this is the 64th running of the West Texas Futurity. So there's hope. It's just that we need help in the open thoroughbred division. And somehow we're going to figure out a way to get it done because obviously we're producing open horses that can win $20 million races. Why can't we have a few of them here?
Great.
That's my question.
Great stuff. Eric, we'll do it again next week. Thanks so much for the time
here,
on Track Talk.
Much too kind.
He's Eric Alwyn, folks. Joins us each and every week here on Sports Talk with Track Talk from Sunland Park Racetrack and Casino. Come back with plenty more. Stay with us. It's 600 ESPN El Paso. Man, you're just rolling the hits today. You're going Foreigner? Man. And you're throwing out all the classic deep tracks today.
Yeah. Time to freshen up our music.
I agree with you completely. I love it. I think, listen, it's March 1st for crying out loud, you know? So, yeah. And it's no knock on the songs that we've been playing for months or years, but we have so many great songs. And we have so many great artists to choose from. I mean, there's no reason why we can't, just give you a little variety from time to time.
Yeah, we can flex our range here on Sports Talk.
Yeah, no, I agree. Good to see Pinky dropping by to pick up those tickets. I'll be seeing him tonight. I'll be seeing Noah tonight. I'll see all of you tonight out at the Coliseum. Really excited about going out and checking out the boxing. And I was there last November when they came, and looking forward to being there tonight. It should be just a terrific night of fighting.
It should, definitely. And whenever we get local boxing here in El Paso, it's always a great thing. I mean, it just shows you and it reminds you of this sport and what kind of potential it really has in this community. I feel like the community always embraces boxing, whether it's a big pay-per-view coming into town or it's a fight like tonight, which is going to be exciting, Ring Wars. And I'm really excited for everybody who's going to be headed out there. Hopefully, it's really cool. I mean, hopefully the quality of the fights are pretty strong.
I agree with you on that one. I'm excited for it. Ring Wars 9, which, by the way, you know the abbreviation for 9 using Roman numerals, right?
Yeah.
It's like the I and the X.
Yes, V-I, or yeah, exactly.
On the tickets, V-I-I-I-I.
Mm, that's okay.
Does that exist?
I don't think so.
I don't either. I love it.
No,
that's funny.
It's okay.
Ticketmaster and Roman numerals. Well, can you imagine if you have like Super Bowl 9 and you have tickets and the ticket says Super Bowl V-I-I-I-I instead of I-X?
Yeah, they got to go back to the Roman numerals. Yeah, get those educated on that. Come on.
Dude, I know. If you're just joining us, hey, we talked UTEP hoops in the first hour. How's UTEP softball doing right now? What's the latest with them?
8-0, final.
They beat Texas State 8-0 after beating Texas Tech.
Yes, beat Texas Tech 3-2 and then beat the Bobcats 8-0.
Gosh. They've had such a great non-conference. I don't know about you, but I can't wait to see what they do in conference play.
Yeah, I mean, this is the year, right? I mean, if they started off like this, if they beat quality teams, this is the year where they should shake up Conference USA and have some success. And yeah, as far as local sports over the weekend, Steve, this is the big one to get excited about. We've got the two basketball games tomorrow, one at the Don with the women's basketball team taking on Liberty, and then on the road, men taking on the Flames as well. And then we've also got Chapin boys basketball that's about to start right now, the Region 1-5A tournament out of the state playoffs, and so they'll take on a really tough opponent in Colleyville Heritage tonight. It's Wichita Falls. That's when it's going to happen. Tip-off is set for 6 o'clock local time.
By the way, I mean, if Chapin wins today, then that means they've advanced as far as they did last year, correct?
That is exactly right, yes. And so if they get into this Elite Eight, I really feel like they've got a shot to go, at least to the Final Four. I really do. This is a great team right here, Steve. They're so loaded. They've gotten some really good support from some of their supporting cast members who don't really see the floor a lot this year. We know a lot about Brandon Himes. We know about Jaden Leverett. Those are the two standouts on this team. But it feels like they're getting contributions from their bench here late in the postseason, which is impressive.
What a job Rodney Lewis has done. I don't think he gets enough credit where credit's deserved. He has built a nice little powerhouse year after year out of Chapin High.
Yes, and he continues to get good talent. He continues to develop that talent, and he continues to have guys who are actually showing out in college basketball as well. I mean, Manny Flores is playing right now, I believe, for Sol Ross, if I'm not mistaken. KJ Lewis, of course, you see what he's doing at Arizona. He's killing it for the Wildcats, for a team who's going to be or who is right now in the top 10 of all of college basketball. And KJ Lewis plays real minutes for that team right behind Caleb Love. So he comes off as a six man as a true freshman. Antoine Holmes is on UTEP's roster right now, walk on their team. They like what he does on their scout team and what he's been able to do for their team. And Leverett is going to be their next Division I prospect. He's already got an offer from the likes of UTEP, the likes of even New Mexico State and Texas A&M Corpus Christi. So that program over there at Chapin, they've done an amazing job of fostering excellent talent and putting out some really good teams who actually make it far in the Texas State playoffs.
So what you're telling me is that the future is bright. Very bright.
Yeah, I mean, they bring back Leverett next year, but this is the team right here. I think that the window of opportunity to make a run, maybe all the way to the Final Four, and I don't want to jinx anything for tonight. I mean, Colleyville Heritage, this is a really tough game. Chapin's been overwhelming favorites. I mean, maybe not the last round, but they've been favorites in about every single playoff game they've been in. This one, they're the underdogs. Colleyville Heritage, this is a fantastic team. I think Chapin does have a chance to win tonight, but it'll be close. just like the last game, is close for this Huskies group. So this is a Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex team. They actually were just behind Denton Ryan, who's one of the best in 5A, and this is going to be a really, really tough one. They've got a 6'11" power forward, Tim Finau, who averages 10.7 rebounds a game.
6'11"?
Yes, Jaden Leverett's tall too, so he's 6'9". So 6'11" versus 6'9". Let's see what happens.
Do we have a good pipeline in the future, by the way, Chapin? Is this the kind of program that over the next few years, Rodney is going to continue to have terrific talent come through?
Yes, he's got some young talent, but also Andrews has some great talent too. So it's going to be Northeast battles between the Eagles and the Huskies for years to come. Both of them have that great young talent that's rising for
Love
sure.
It.
So yeah, I'm excited to see what happens tonight. Colleyville Heritage versus Chapin.
All right. And Chapin, the last team left in the high school baseball and basketball playoffs, but man, they could, again, continue this run. And if they win tonight, you tell me, as underdogs, then sky's the limit, right?
Yes, that's right. Actually, the winners would actually play tomorrow in the morning. And so if they have a chance, they can have a chance to, if they win that one, it's Final Four action in San Antonio.
By the way, I hate that. I can't stand the fact that these teams have to play two games in like 16 or 17 hours. That's just not right. You should give them at least 24 hours rest before they have to tip off again. It just doesn't seem right.
Yeah, that's really tough right there. I mean, that's extremely. I mean, first off, Chapin just making the trip out to Wichita Falls. Yep. That's a bus ride in itself. Mm-hmm. Then you're talking about playing two games in less than 24 hours. Yeah, that's grueling on the body.
Middle of the show as we continue. When we return, there's a very interesting meeting today involving one Green Bay Packers running back that Opasoans have loved since day one. And it could very well impact his future with the franchise. We'll tell you about it right after Adrian returns with SportsCenter. Bottom of the hour as we continue. According to one Tom Silverstein from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, he reported this afternoon that Green Bay Packer officials have met with Drew Rosenhaus, the agent for Aaron Jones at the NFL Scouting Combine, hoping to reach agreement on a salary cap cut that would make the final year of his contract less burdensome to their cap. According to the story and according to a source, the Packers and Rosenhaus are trying to get to a number that would satisfy the team's desire to lower his salary cap number. How they would reduce the salary cap number remains to be seen and part of future discussions. But as Silverstein says, the bottom line is the Packers want Aaron Jones back. If they cannot reach an agreement in the next 2 weeks, the Packers would release him and hope whoever they are offering isn't matched on the open market. So that would be interesting. But they also risk losing Aaron Jones to another team. So they're going to try to work with Rosenhaus to find a way to negotiate a cap reduction. And in case you're wondering, Jones is scheduled to earn a base salary of $11 million plus a per-game roster bonus worth a maximum of $258,824 and a workout bonus of $500,000. So they want to cut his cap number because of the six games that Jones missed last season and some of the others with the hamstring and knee injuries. So remember, he had that torn left MCL and then came back and had 300-yard games to end the season. And in the playoffs, had two more 100-yard games and had three touchdowns in that win over Dallas. So it's going to be really interesting. Look, Aaron Jones has worked with the Packers his whole career. He has said from day one he wants to be a Green Bay Packer for life. He's also about to be 30 years old. You got to understand something. What Aaron Jones has done in Green Bay is the minority, meaning that most superstar running backs are not about to turn 30 with the same team that drafted them out of college. By now, they're usually on their second or third team. Case in point, Dalvin Cook, Ezekiel Elliott, and the list goes on and on. Plus, the free agent class this year is absolutely stacked. Look, prediction time. I think they'll find a way to make it work. I don't think Aaron Jones ever wants to leave Green Bay as long as the Packers are reasonable. As long as they don't try to lowball him to where it's something that they can't, you know, that can't make sense. You know, Rosenhaus is the kind of agent that if Aaron Jones says to him, "Hey, look, Drew, I want to stay in Green Bay. I know you might be able to get more money elsewhere, but I'm that's my home. That's where I want to be. I've got a good situation." I just feel like that is what will end up happening. I don't see Aaron Jones being released in 2 weeks.
Me neither. I see them prolonging this. And to your point, I think the guy who actually gets the bad end of this whole situation will be AJ Dillon. He'll probably be the one released from the Packers. They'll have to find a complimentary back to coexist with Aaron Jones. And we've seen exactly what you said, Steve. They've really worked with him in the past. In 2022, he only was a $5.9 million cap hit. Last year, a $7.8 million cap hit. I would expect them to restructure this deal. $17 million for a cap hit, that is steep. If you can actually spread that out over the next 2-3 years, sign him to a longer term deal and ensure him that he'll be within this organization and that he'll have some money coming his way as well, I think that makes the most sense out of this whole situation. I'd be really surprised to see them release Aaron Jones, especially how he closed out the year. Yep. When it really mattered and when it was the postseason.
And by the way, I think that A.J. Dillon's getting released no matter what. I don't think Dillon comes back even if they cut Jones. I feel like that decision's already been made. Isn't it interesting how they drafted Jamal Williams thinking he would be the workhorse back and Aaron Jones proved to be the guy? Then they draft A.J. Dillon a few years later hoping to take the role of the workhorse back over from Aaron Jones, and Aaron stayed that guy. I find it funny because the Packers probably never expected to get the kind of years and mileage out of Jones like they have. And knowing how good he was late in the season, it goes to show you that age is just a number with him. And even though some believe that they'll draft a running back this year to assume the mantle of that, you know, that everyday guy from Aaron Jones, which makes the most sense, why should Jones suddenly feel like he's slowing down when every time the ball's in his hands, big things always happen?
Yeah, and if you really think about it, I mean, even drafted in the fifth round the way that he was, he's really had to prove everybody wrong since day one.
Yep.
And he's kind of had the odds stacked against him throughout his career in this situation. At least from a business perspective, drafting A.J. Dillon, he's got to be the guy. Give him more touches. See what he could do in the red zone. See how healthy and durable he can be, which has been put in question. He hasn't been as productive as Aaron Jones. It's no question about it. Jones is productive when he's on the field, when he's healthy. He's one of the best players who could play for the Packers, especially as they're going on this rebuild. He could be the veteran in the locker room that everybody sees and says, "Hey, look, we can look up to this guy right here to be, you know, the guy that we lean on in these situations, adverse situations, stuff like that." So I don't think that you could really put a price tag on that. And I think that's why they'll end up working with Aaron Jones on the steal.
Not to mention leadership skills. Not to mention the guy that always has everybody's back from day one, has never been, you know, given any other type of role. He's been a leader since he stepped on the field, and that's what I love about him. Most running backs don't have that kind of leadership role. Aaron Jones has, it's almost like he's a quarterback. He's just taken that on his shoulders to be the leader of the team, and has since he was drafted. I'll tell you this much too, okay? Usually when dominant college players go pro, they don't make the pro game look as easy as they did when they were in college. I've always said since day one, when you watch Aaron Jones run in the NFL, there's no difference between what he's done in the NFL and what he did at UTEP. It is so rare, because you always say to yourself, well, they're bigger, they're faster, they're stronger. You're going to need to make adjustments. You're going to need to do this or that, and you'll never be able to dominate games the way you dominated in college. I've often felt, watching Aaron Jones, that when I see him with the Packers and what he does to NFL defenses was exactly like what he did carving up Conference USA defenses for the time he was at UTEP. And it just blows me away that he's had the same kind of success like we saw here, and really never struggled running the ball throughout his career in the NFL.
Yeah, if you think about it, also with you reflect back to the 2017 draft class. Leonard Fournette goes to Jacksonville real early. Christian McCaffrey, he gets selected by the Panthers very early on. I think those two guys are also great examples, like Aaron Jones, of guys who had success in college and translated it to the NFL. Yeah. But I would say Aaron Jones is better, has had a better NFL career than Leonard Fournette, despite Leonard Fournette having a Super Bowl ring under his belt. Christian McCaffrey, you could say he's the best running back in the league. No one's arguing that right
yes.
there. But I would say Aaron's had success in his own lane. He didn't need to be Christian McCaffrey. McCaffrey got dealt away over to the 49ers and helped them make a Super Bowl run, but he's had durability questions his entire career. Aaron Jones has been more durable than, you know, somebody like Christian McCaffrey.
It's true. I mean, time in, you look at the number of games played since they were drafted, I would feel like Aaron's played more games. I have to double check that, but I think you're right on that. All right, 20 in front of six. We've got Locomotive FC, you know, El Paso Locomotive FC, one of their newcomers coming by the studio within the next 20 minutes. He'll lead off our 6 o'clock hour. We'll take you right up until 7, and then we wrap things up and get you ready for the weekend. It's been a fun show so far, and we are just past the midway point, so a lot more in store. Stay with us. Sports Talk continues, 600 ESPN El Paso. Back here on Sports Talk as we continue, 48 now past the hour, 505-6009, our telephone number. Saw this question from Pinky. It's a good one, too, and I think it needs to be mentioned because you really kind of you want to answer this the right way. But Pinky asks, will we ever see a Texas UIL any sport regional final in El Paso? Just asking for a friend. El Paso high school fans get the short end each year. What do you think, Adrian? Can we ever see that?
Probably not for basketball, knowing the proximity issues. I mean, it doesn't make it any more fair for anybody here in El Paso who has to travel hours and hours on end. Whereas if you're in the Metroplex, you're in Austin, you're in San Antonio, you're in Houston, not a crazy bus ride like it would be El Paso going to one of those cities right there. And that has to be factored in. I mean, that's tough for these teams. It's not like everybody can just say, I want to have a hotel room for all my players the night before. Some of these programs can't do that, so they have to go either day of or maybe, you know, try to get there early so that their players can get as much rest as possible. So it's just tough for everybody in El Paso to have to travel. I'm not as optimistic about that being a reality.
Right. Especially since if El Paso ever was able to get some kind of regional final, then everybody's going to complain about coming all the way over here
right.
because it's not close to anywhere. And that's the toughest part is that, you know, you look at schools from like Fort Worth and Houston and San Antonio and to a lot of those schools, Austin and Wichita Falls and some of the other places. Well, I mean, it's you know, El Paso just does get the short end of the stick based on its location. And unfortunately, considering there's really nothing close to here, it's just the way it is. I mean, you
right.
can't do anything.
You know, the only two facilities would be the top facilities for a project like this would be Bel Air or Eastwood. So they would mm-hmm. have, I feel like, the top facilities to host something like that. And then, of course, imagine having it at the Don Haskins Center. That would be really cool to do something like that there.
Be amazing. What if you did the Don Haskins Center or Memorial Gym?
Right. Imagine. I mean, I'm just all for just period. More basketball in Memorial Gym. We need to see yep. more basketball, whether it's the men's team, the women's team, just playing a one-off over there. Hey, if you're going to play these exhibition games, why not make it in the Memorial Gym? It's always fun to go out there.
But it's expensive to rent it. And I don't know if UIL would want to spend the money to do it. I don't know what kind of a deal. Maybe Wichita Falls gives them a sweet deal and cuts them a nice break.
Right, and maybe it's just easier for, and maybe also some of these teams are willing, hey, I know that you're coming from West Texas, you're going to have to go on a certain hour bus ride, so let's do it at Wichita Falls, so it's kind of in between the Metroplex Dallas area and some of these West Texas schools, whether it's El Paso or whether it's Midland, any of those types.
You know, it'd be great would be if the UIL would commit to come here, if they would build a facility to house what they need, and now all of a sudden you could see construction for the kind of venue that would suit something like this.
Yeah, that's a really good point in itself. I mean, it also goes back to the arena talk, right? And what you could potentially host if you end up building something that is in the city of El Paso that could host events like this. And then you can actually go to – you have a seat at the table, say, hey, we have these facilities. We can bring you into this system, and something like this.
That is a good point. All right, look, as we talk about some of the high school dreams of Pinky and other fans, we are also going to have a new member of El Paso Locomotive FC joining us on the show here coming up in a few. And one of the latest acquisitions, he is part of the all-new defense that has a new look to a lot of new players on the defensive side for 2024. And by the way, I don't know if you saw this or not, Adrian, but Paso Locomotive FC dropped a new jersey, the primary jersey for this year.
I got to check that out. I'm a big jersey guy. We are all big jersey guys on this show, so I got to check that out. We've been blessed to have a lot of great Locomotive FC guests over the past couple weeks, Steve. And next week, I know we're going to get head coach Brian Klarhut to stop by, and Andrew Forrest might make a stop by as well. So I'm now just seeing these jerseys, and I love them. Wow, they did a great job on these.
A lot of people think when they see these jerseys, they like them a lot too, that there's it's just the design, the color scheme, everything about them just looks really good.
Yeah, they did a great job. I love the lines. I love the incorporation, the subtle incorporation of the yellow on the collar. I think that's a fresh look, and the base being navy gold, navy blue, just sign me up for that.
Yeah, I agree with you. So we'll get a chance to talk a little Locomotive FC coming up in our final hour of the program, and then get you ready for the weekend. Remember, UTEP playing Liberty tomorrow at 1 o'clock. That's senior day for the ladies. I'm heading out to the arena tomorrow. I'm looking forward to seeing the final game of the regular season for Keitha and company at home before they hit the road next Thursday for their final game before the start of conference tournament action. And then the men will be playing about 4 hours later against Liberty. And these are big games. I mean, listen, men want to try to win their second road game in a row and upset Liberty. And remember, the men were underdogs yesterday against Jacksonville State. They were a 5.5-point underdog in that one.
Yeah, I expect probably the same margin, maybe even more, yep, for Liberty here tomorrow. So let's see what that line looks like.
I was thinking 7 or 8, maybe.
Yeah, that's probably right.
See what happens. All right, so 2 hours down, 1 to go. We'll come back. We'll talk some Locomotive FC in a moment. Stay with us. Sports Talk continues. 600 ESPN El Paso. As we continue, I'm excited about our next guest. He's joining us, making his first trip here to the show. Bola Wakanyode is one of the newest members of El Paso Locomotive FC. He is a defensive midfielder. Wow, a defensive midfielder. Sound familiar? That's exactly what Brandon Craig was when he joined us last week. And now Bolu gets a chance to say hello to us on the program. First off, we've been talking a lot during the break. It's good to meet you, and thanks so much for stopping by today. How you doing?
I'm good. Of course, the pleasure is mine. Thank you for having me.
Well, first off, I'm excited about your arrival here in El Paso with Locomotive FC. This is a team that has been among the better expansion teams since they debuted, almost 7 years ago now in USL. And I think more than anything, a lot of us are excited to see players like yourself who have, you've been around USL for many, many years, and now you have the opportunity to spend your first time here with Locomotive FC.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. I remember when the club first came around and actually watched games and saw how the community took to the team and how it got fans and engagement and stuff. So it's always a place that I've always thought was special, and the team had success, don't get me wrong, like conference finals and all that good stuff. So I'm excited to be here and add to that history.
Meanwhile, for fans that are not familiar with your story, Bolu, you've got a pretty unique situation. So I wanted to tell everybody about kind of your origins, where you grew up, and what brought you here to the States.
Yeah, I was born in Nigeria, Lagos, Nigeria. Lived there until I was 10, and then I moved over to the States, New York City to be exact, with my mom and my siblings, three older brothers and a younger sister. But I moved with one older brother and a younger sister. So it was just kind of us. Grew up there. We came to the States for a better life, for opportunity, and luckily we've been able to achieve that amongst me and my siblings.
Well, first off, you got a good New York accent. It's still, you haven't lost that yet, so congratulations. That's still there. When you came over stateside, did you always gravitate to soccer, or did you play other sports as well as a kid?
No, it's always been soccer. And I joke around with a lot of my friends, like, I suck at other sports. So it was soccer. And soccer is a big, big part of the Nigerian culture, and that's what we did growing up, honestly. We were obsessed with it, being fans, playing on the streets, playing for teams. And then when I came to America, it was just adjusting and finding a team to play for.
What was soccer like in New York City, knowing you've got baseball, football, basketball, hockey? There's so many sports that kids play growing up in, you know, the New York City area. So how big is soccer when you really look at the boroughs of Manhattan and New York and where everything is?
No, it wasn't. Honestly, when I first came, it was not big. I actually spent, I'd say, a year and a half, almost 2 years, not playing at all, just because it wasn't very accessible. Everyone played basketball. I actually tried to play basketball at the time, but I was terrible at it. But yeah, it wasn't super accessible. But luckily, my older brother, he met a friend in school that was playing for a club team in Brooklyn, and that's how we're kind of able to get playing again and found parks and teams and people and stuff and get rolling. But it's definitely grown a ton from when I first moved to the States, which was 20 years ago now. So yeah, it's grown, and I think it's definitely a lot more accessible now than it was back then.
So Brooklyn was the key. Brooklyn had the club team. That got you guys started. And then did you find that? I mean, because I know soccer is huge in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of teams that play competitive out there. And then really the whole East Coast after that. You have Massachusetts, and you start to look Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And it's growing. It's probably one of the fastest growing sports in the Northeast part of the country because of the popularity of MLS.
Yeah, for sure. And it's funny you say that because I spent a lot of my time playing in New Jersey. So initially I played for a team in Brooklyn called the Brooklyn Patriots, and I found an ad for the New York Red Bull Academy, and they were all set up in New Jersey. So then I went out there with my brother and went for trials and wound up playing majority of my youth soccer in New Jersey, actually. So tremendous amount of talent. It's funny, two of my teammates now, we grew up playing on my first ever team, on my U14 team in New York.
Really?
Yeah. So that's been really cool to kind of have things come full circle. One was 30 years old now, and we started playing at 14 together. So that's nice to see.
When you reflect back on choosing to go to Seton Hall after your youth career with New York, what was that decision like right there? Was that the ultimate opportunity at that point for you, or were you trying to get out to the MLS or things like that and play professional soccer here in the States?
Yeah, I think for me at the time, I was 16 years old, like, I wanted to be a pro, and I wanted to play professional, and there was so much talent in our youth academy, and maybe there was an opportunity for me to kind of train with the first team and go there, but education has been so big to my mom and to my family, and that was the entire reason why we came here. So when I had the opportunity to go to college and still play soccer and get a scholarship, and I think it was a no-brainer for me and my family.
We're talking right now with Abolo Akinyode here on Sports Talk. He is a defender for El Paso Locomotive FC. So we're looking at everything you've had a chance to do. The Red Bulls you mentioned, you played for Bethlehem Steel FC, North Carolina FC, Nashville SC, Birmingham Legion, the last three seasons with Miami FC, and now here you are in El Paso. So you are a well-traveled, seasoned vet over these years with USL, which means you've played a lot of Eastern Conference action, and now you're really going to be getting a good taste of what the Western Conference is like here in El Paso.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that was one of the things in my decision is I wanted to experience the West because I'd never played out West for a team. And El Paso was a no-brainer for me after talking with Brian and Ray and the guys on the coaching staff. So I'm excited to be here. I'm really excited for the season.
Bola, were there other clubs in USL that were interested in bringing you over and wanted to try and add you to their roster this offseason?
Yeah, there were a few teams. But like I said, the conversations with Ray and Brian and swayed my decision. But yeah, there are definitely a few teams.
All right, so you arrive here in El Paso. You're seeing a roster that has a lot of newcomers. You mentioned some of those just in your answer with players you grew up with in the East Coast. What was your first impression when you went on the pitch for the first time and saw your teammates?
Yeah, it was special. I think looking at our roster and you looking at the things that a lot of guys have achieved individually, there's no doubt that we have a talented team. And it's special to play with some of these guys and looking at guys that I grew up playing with, and we had the dream to play professional, to actually do it together at this point in my career. It's a special thing for me.
I'm sure. And then I know defensively, the one thing I noticed is – You have a lot of size. It seems like it is a large group of defenders. A lot of you guys are 6 feet or taller, and I could just tell that that's one of the things Brian likes. He likes big, you know, big, strong defensive players.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's one thing that's necessary. If you look at the teams that have won the league in the past, they've had size, they've had strength, but they've also guys who can play with the ball and guys who are technical, which Brian likes a lot too. So you got to be able to mix it up and do both because the game requires a lot of different things.
How different do you see the MLS and the USL in terms of talent and competition?
I think it's not as different as people think. And if you look at results in the Open Cup in the past, you see that USL teams compete and they're right there with them. But I do think in MLS, you get the special players, the top players, obviously. You have the Hany Mukhtars in Nashville and the guys who are very, very special, obviously, goes without saying. There's Messi, there's Busquets, there's Alba. But those type caliber players you see. But I think from there on, you look at the rosters. I think USL teams can compete with most MLS teams when given a chance.
Do you think, Bolu, that in years to come, because Messi now and we're starting to see other players follow his lead, that we'll get more and more European stars that as they get older, and I don't want to say necessarily past their prime, but they want to keep playing, yet they might not be as dominant as they were in their younger years, MLS and the attractiveness of coming to the United States for the check and helping to put butts in the seats could make sense to a lot of some of the best players around the world.
Yeah, I think if you look in the past, you see the Steven Gerrards, Andrea Pirlo, Frank Lampard, you've seen those kind of guys come when they're past their prime. But I think what's interesting now is you're getting younger players who aspire to go to Europe, and they're coming to MLS, like Miguel Almiron. He spent some time with Atlanta United and won it and did well, and now he's playing in the Premier League. So I think you're going to get more of kind of the 23 to 25-year-olds who want to make the move because more eyes are watching American soccer and seeing the progress being made here. So that's a good thing.
Bolu Akinyode with us here on Sports Talk in studio as we continue. So as far as your style of game, give our listeners a little bit of an idea about what you bring to the mix and kind of your skill set and how that'll fit into the puzzle this season here in El Paso.
Definitely a lot of aggression. Good defender, a competitor. I'm someone that likes to compete. I hate to lose. I hate to give up goals. So I think you see a lot of passion, a lot of aggression, a lot of competitiveness, and a guy who's calm on the ball as well, too, and understands the game and likes to play.
Are you also somebody who enjoys taking that free kick and would like to try to put one in the net from time to time?
My track record doesn't say so, but I think more stopping the goal than scoring the goals, for sure.
Okay. And by the way, I'm just curious. So when you started playing this sport here in the States, were you always on the defensive side of the ball, or were you more of an attacker?
No, I was more of an attacker. I started off like as a winger or someone closest to the goal, and as time goes on, I kind of got pulled back and further back. So
you tell me, was that as you started growing more and more?
Yeah.
Or you know, how does that work?
I think growing and naturally, like my aggression, I was good defensively, I was good at winning the ball back, and I enjoyed doing that stuff, so naturally I just got closer to defending more than attacking.
Have you ever had the desire to try to play on the Nigerian national team and maybe compete in the Olympics, the World Cup, or some of the other qualifiers out there?
Yeah, that was something that would be special to me, but I think our national team pool is so big and there's so many different players. It's been tough to get that look, but something that would be incredible for me.
I mean, I was just wondering about just the quality of Nigeria as a national team. How do they rank with some of the other teams that we're used to watching around that time of year?
They're a team that's usually in the World Cup for the most part. They're a team that the African Cup of Nations just finished. They made it to the finals, and historically, they've won an Olympic gold medal. So they're definitely one of the best in Africa for sure, and a team that's around there in the world. So they're a top team.
As far as your accomplishments so far over your years in USL, have you played for a USL championship in the past?
I've not played in the finals, no. I've been on teams that have competed and been, I think the furthest I made it to was a conference semifinal. Mm-hmm. But I've been on teams that have done quite well. But I've never made it to a final, no.
But you've also seen this league grow from when you first started to where it is right now. And it seems like USL is probably the fastest growing league in all of professional soccer.
Yeah, 100%. They've done an incredible job. I think my rookie year, even just the amount of teams, the amount of markets they've tapped into, the stadiums that are being built. I mean, like you look at Louisville Stadium, it's incredible. It's a beautiful stadium. So I think the growth of the league has been tremendous to watch from back then into now. It's a great vision, and I think we're still going in the right direction, even like the expansion to USL League One. It's been something special, honestly, to witness.
Now, when you started playing, who did you kind of model your game after in the beginning? Did you have certain players that you really idolized and thought, man, this is part of the reason why I want to play this?
Yeah, I think there's, from Nigerian national team, there was a guy, JJ Okocha, who was great. I enjoyed watching him. He was more of an entertainer. And guys like Yaya Toure, there was similar body type and physique as well, Paul Pogba. All those guys, I think, definitely inspired me and pushed me on and wanted to be like them and do some of the things that they did on the field.
So you didn't mention Messi and Ronaldo, which is good, because that's the easiest answer that most people will say. They see Messi, they see Ronaldo, and I'm sure there'll be that great debate going on for years, wondering who's if you're going to pick between those two, the GOAT, who would you give the edge to?
So Ronaldo I enjoyed watching growing up because he played for my favorite team, Manchester United, but I think Messi is just more of a natural talent in football. It's probably a bigger entertainer if you look at their two body of work, but I don't like to compare the two. I think both are special in their own realm, and I think we're witnessing something that we'll probably never witness again in professional sports.
This is a weird question, but how are you adjusting to Mountain Time Zone right now? Just the new time change. You mentioned it. You've always played on the Eastern kind of coast. You played a little for Nashville as well. But what is it like playing in the Mountain Time Zone right now?
Yeah, no, it's definitely different. It's something I didn't consider, honestly, until I moved here. But even like little things like talking to my family, I have to call them a lot earlier because they're 2 hours in front of me. But it's been all right. Personally, I've adjusted well, but I think it'll be different because people back home to watch me play and my friends and stuff, they're on the other side of the town, but it's good.
Now, how long have you been in town for?
I got here January 4th.
Okay, so you just finished, like 2 months or so.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you had a chance to enjoy some of the food that El Paso offers?
I have. I've gone to different restaurants and stuff, and it's been good. It's been good.
Okay. I was going to ask you if you like Mexican food.
I do.
Then you've picked a good spot.
Yeah, for sure. No, the food's been good. I think that's one of the things that I've enjoyed the most, like the food in the restaurant. It's really good. I don't think I've been to a restaurant that I didn't enjoy so far.
Good. We asked you about the defensive side of the ball earlier in the back three. Well, tell me a little bit about this team in general. I mean, should we expect to see a team that's going to score a lot of goals, a lot of attackers and players that can finish and put the ball in the net?
Yeah, I think you see a team that's aggressive. I think you see a team that likes to be dominant and in control of games on the ball. I think you see a team that likes to score. It's a lot of talent on this team. You look at guys like Amando Moreno, Joaquin Rivas, Justin Dillon. Like, these are guys... these are guys that can put the ball past the line. They're entertaining guys and guys who can make things happen for this team.
How about your goalkeeper?
Good. Jamali's good. He's a good keeper. It's awesome because he was in the academy at Philadelphia when I was on Bethlehem. So I watched him kind of grow into himself, and I thought he had an excellent year last year. And he's someone that's really, really good.
Okay, so you're familiar with him, and I'm sure you're familiar with a lot of players on this roster. Is there going to be a lot of competition trying to break that starting rotation for Brian and make sure that you kind of keep yourself in that starting lineup, match in, match out?
100%. I think you look down the roster, every single player can be a starter for this team and for any USL team in the league. So I think it's a lot of competition. It's good. I think Brian will have a lot of headaches after preseason and all that stuff, but that's what you need. You need competition. Competition is what makes you grow. Competition is what keeps the team intact and keeps everyone on their toes. So I think we'll see that for sure.
Bola, when you're not playing and you're not practicing or training, what are you doing? Tell me a little bit about life off the pitch and what you like to do.
Yeah, I like to read. I like to write a little bit. I think I've grown and trying to push that and be a writer and just constantly think about different things and see the world in an interesting way. So I think that's something that's good. And I'm also looking at life ahead. I'm studying for my coaching license right now. So yeah, a lot of I keep busy in the time that I'm not playing.
So the point is, you could see yourself coaching this sport once your playing days are over.
Yes, 100%.
Do you like working with youngsters?
Yes and no. I think the ones that are passionate, the one that love the game, yes, 100%. But soccer is such a special thing because it brings so many different people. And I look at all the friends and people that I've made along the way. Maybe there were people that I played with that were good at it, but they weren't as passionate as me. You know, so. I think it's understanding that as well, too, and all the different nuances that come with it. So,
well, meanwhile, it's funny that you say that because there's so many more distractions now for youngsters than there used to be, whether it's gaming, social media, and everything else. I think it almost takes really, you have to appreciate the commitment today from youngsters that decide they really want to dedicate their lives to trying to be the best they could possibly be and one day play this at a professional level.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a lot of sacrifice. It's a lot of being away from your friends, your family. It's a lot of choosing, honestly, the pain that comes with it, whether it's running, whether it's being in the gym, or those moments, you have to choose that over the pleasure moments, right? Like going to prom, or like I didn't go to prom. I miss a lot of parties and times with my friends because I wanted to do this, but there's nothing more in the world that I wanted to do than play soccer and kick a ball and run around.
Now, you said writing. Would you like to eventually either write a book or for you, what appeals most about being a writer?
Yeah, I think expressing myself. It's given me a way to kind of sit and think and be introspective a little bit and use and exercise different parts of my brain that I don't when I play soccer. So I think eventually the goal down the line is to write a book. Definitely still far off of it yet, but rough around the edges, but something I'm working towards.
Excellent. Do we have any idea at all what kind of a book you'd like to write? Would it be a story of your career, your life? Would it be just writing a nonfiction or a fiction book, a novel? What are we thinking here?
I think a story of my life, a cross path of my career and how soccer has impacted me, but also how I've navigated that and story of my family and just everything intertwined. I think it's something I definitely still have to think of, but it definitely will be about my life.
I love that. I think that's great, and I'm excited for you, and I think that's something a lot of fans are going to be excited about. Meanwhile, when we see you on the pitch, you kind of gave us a little preview of what to expect. The jerseys dropped today. Give me your thoughts on the primary jerseys you're going to be wearing for the 2024 season.
Oh, no, I love it. I love it. I love the look of it. I love the color. That navy, that blue is good. It's great. I think it's a great fit as well, too, so I'm excited for it.
All right. Excellent stuff. Good to meet you. Thanks for stopping by. Hartford's right around the corner. Before you know it, we've got the season starting up, and man, I think fans are going to be really excited about the 2024 locomotive roster.
As they should be. I think it'll be good. I think hopefully we can bring a trophy back to El Paso.
Bolo, great to meet you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
He's Bolo Akinyode, folks, defensive midfielder for El Paso Locomotive FC. Come back with more. Sports Talk continues, 600 ESPN El Paso. Far so good for Chapin. They've got a 15-12 lead. Just under 5 minutes left to play in the second quarter. Trying to advance out of Wichita Falls. Wichita Falls, by the way, doing a nice job on the cast for this one. I like this, guys. You found the YouTube cast. It looks really good. Colleyville at the line right now for some free throws and trying to cut into that Chapin lead.
I love this Chapin defense, man. They're ferocious. Doesn't matter if their opponents in Colleyville have a 6'11" guy in center who's on the floor. I like how this Chapin team has been throwing out different defenses to try to stop him. And in fact, once they subbed out, I'm talking about Colleyville subbed out their 6'11" guy. That's when Jaden Leverett, who is 6'9", subbed in for Chapin. So let's see what they can do to close out this first half.
El Paso Visuals with a question I wish I could answer, but I can't. He said, guys, do you know if Chapin went from Midland to Wichita Falls, or did they come home and then get on the bus again a day later?
Man, that would be tough travel. I would hope that they stayed there or somewhere nearby because that travel sounds pretty, tough on these players. So I hope that they were able to stay out there. I'm going to try to look on their social media account to see if they have anything.
You know, I can see the Colleyville size, but you know what? I mean, Chapin looks like, when you look at their size, too, and the way they match up, it's favorable. And by the way, they're playing in a Coliseum in Wichita Falls that looks like it houses a hockey team because, Adrian, I see the white boards over there beyond the bench area, and those are hockey boards, so it probably was converted for it's the K. Yeager College, and that's where they're playing right now in Wichita Falls.
Yeah, that is real interesting in itself, Steve. I love this big man matchup that we're seeing right now, by the way. 6'11" versus 6'9", two guys who are just going at it, and it seems like the Colleyville top big man, he's got some skill to him as well. I really like Jaden Leverett. Like we mentioned earlier in the show, he's a D1 prospect, but you're right. I mean, for them to get to play in this kind of environment, I love the arena. I like the little quirk quirks to it, the fact that it probably, or that it houses a hockey team, and the fact that there are two quality teams playing there, that's a pretty cool thing too.
Who has offered Leverett so far as I watch him play in the post?
He actually has been offered by UTEP, which is interesting, and he's been offered by New Mexico State, and he's been offered by Texas A&M Corpus Christi.
Okay, and he is a senior this year, or is he a junior?
Junior, so he'll be back next year.
Okay, that's interesting. And by the way, if you're Jaden Leverett, I guess you just wait to see it during the summer circuit if you get more offers, and then you have the opportunity to continue to make your decision. And he might keep growing, or do you think 6'9 is where he's going to max out?
Maybe he will. I've asked that question too. People are unsure when I've asked that question in the past. So I've also seen Texas Tech show interest in Leverett. So that's something to also keep an eye on if he actually gets an offer from them. That's Grant McCaslin out there. So he definitely, McCaslin would like some size like Leverett offers.
Sure he would. He would love that. And that's also kind of interesting, speaking of McCaslin, just because of the situation earlier this week against Texas. They got the, Texas got the win, but there was some serious controversy out there in Lubbock in the process.
Right. They were throwing things on the court that entire game, and he had to go on the mic, McCaslin did, to try to tell everybody, hey, stop throwing things on to the court. So I thought that was pretty funny. I mean, he actually had to jump on the mic right there to go out and say that kind of stuff. Really interesting.
I feel like that's happened before at UTEP. Not fans throwing things on the court, but I can't remember the situation, but I feel years ago that one of our basketball coaches got on the mic to talk to the fans.
I feel like that's correct. Maybe it was like on the court or something like that, but I feel like that's right. I feel like I remember this as well.
The problem is, for me, there's so many games, so many years. It's all one. The last 28 years has been one big blur. That's the problem. I know it wasn't Don Haskins. I don't think it was Jason Rabideau. It might have been Billy Gillespie or Doc Sadler. I'm not 100% sure. It's one of those things where, yeah. But I feel like it has happened on one other occasion over the years.
Sometimes when it happens, it's also a little cringe, right? Because the coach has to do something they're not comfortable in doing, and hopping on the mic in front of the whole crowd to tell them something. Yeah, it's usually not a good thing.
Well, especially when McCaslin got on the mic and basically told the crowd, stop doing it or we're going to get a technical, which they were assessed anyway in that game.
Yeah, and they were getting killed in that game too. So it's not a good look all around.
All right, we've got a good one as we near halftime right now between Chapin and Colleyville. Here to update you on that and everything else is Adrian. One last bottom of the hour Sports Center update here as we continue. Adrian, thank you very much. As we continue here on the program, in our final 30 minutes, if you would like to get into the show, 505-6009. That's 505-6009. I watched a UTEP football video that was put on social like yesterday, the day before, like a 90-second video. Adrian, I'm not going to lie to you. I can't wait for spring ball this year. I feel like as much as we've got to do our day job, which is sales, but we're not on the air, we've got to spend as much time as humanly possible trying to see what that new staff and new roster is going to be up to as far as UTEP football goes.
Yeah, 17 days until the first spring practice, but who's counting, right? Spring break is right around the corner for these guys. I believe they get let loose next week, so I think they're done Thursday, Friday, and they get to go home for a week, and then right after that, it's the start of spring ball. So let's see what happens. Our very own Cade McConnell will be a part of it. We'll get to watch him. We'll get to watch this new team. And yeah, most anticipated I can remember a UTEP spring ball since that 2005 transition year, after they had that fantastic first year in 2004 under head coach Mike Price way back when. I don't remember that much excitement about a spring practice way back until then. I mean, that's probably the last time I remember this much buzz around it.
Here's the thing. I feel the same way about spring ball as I do about fall camp. I feel like it's nice to watch, but we really won't know anything until we see this team on the field for their first regular season game. But that being said, maybe because the staff is completely different, the style is completely different, the energy and enthusiasm is like something we've really never seen before, I am so curious to watch and see what it's going to be like for spring practice. My curiosity has almost made it where, yeah, I want to see as much football from this group as I possibly can just to get a feel for what might be coming in about 5 months when the season gets ready to start up.
Yeah, of course. The hype and excitement is just about the newness. It's not about the actual team. If you're going to talk to me about the team and the schedule, knowing how difficult it is, I mean, me trying to talk myself into 4 wins, that's pretty difficult right here. Just knowing who they have to play. I've got 4 guaranteed losses in my head right now. Liberty, I've got the Colorado State game, the Tennessee game, and Nebraska. That's just me looking at it, outside looking in. And now I'm curious to see how this current new roster responds to practice, how they practice, just period. Remember, with Dana Dimmel, the interesting part that he did that not a lot of other teams and, you know, college programs across the country, they don't do, Dana Dimmel did not really hit at his practices. From everything we've heard from Cade McConnell and Scotty Walden, they're going to be hitting at practice again. Remember, these practices under Dimmel were pretty, I would say, just very, they would go through all of their schemes, all of their game plan and all of that kind of stuff, but they wouldn't actually hit. Now, with Scotty Walden, they're going to be hitting, Steve.
I feel like injuries hurt Dimmel so much, it was almost like he was afraid to hit because he didn't want anybody else to go down. And
he couldn't afford it.
No. But this group doesn't seem to have that kind of a concern, at least early on. That could always change during the season when things happen. But at least as far as it's, as far as we know now, it's all systems go for this group.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I feel like now they've at least shown that they've recruited a lot of depth at every position. So if they truly have the depth, I mean, these past couple of years, it feels like the fans were sold on the depth that would never really get to show itself on the court. If they actually build that depth, they won't have to worry about things like the injuries that could pop up and that will not could inevitably pop up throughout the season. It's football. It's a physical sport.
It's a very physical sport. So now you're right. It's a really good point and something that needs to be brought up. Hey, by the way, and I don't have the answer to this. Maybe you do, because the more I think about it, I don't know. But do we have any idea whatsoever what happened to Aaron Dumas? Has that mystery been solved?
No, it hasn't. All my indications have told me that he is not currently on the team, and he is not enrolled at UTEP. I don't know if he's currently playing or on a roster anywhere right now, but that's at least what I know.
Okay. We know that Aaron Dumas was injured, but was, you know, apparently going to put himself in a position to come back. But, man, I'm like you. I'm trying to find out, you know, where his next stop is, and I just don't know. So, I think that's going to be a real interesting question at this point, because even on social, you know, he hasn't put much on over the last few years. So I don't know. I mean, it'd be a shame if he walks away from football after all these years, because I would still love to see what a healthy Aaron Dumas could do if given a chance.
Me too. I mean, Aaron Dumas was somebody who is a Mountain West all-freshman when he was first at New Mexico. Remember, if he had had a little more patience in that Washington system, he could have been playing in that national championship, knowing that they had injuries to their running back positions, the Husky did, and he was just kind of in that running back group. So he would have had an opportunity to maybe see the field if that could have been the case, but he transferred over to UTEP last year, elected to take the red shirt, and didn't waste his eligibility last season. So this year, I'm curious, does he land on a roster, and which roster would that be? Would UTEP welcome him on this team? Or, as this coaching staff has said in the past, did they have the ultimatum already where the cutoff time is there, and they probably wouldn't accept somebody, or they might not accept somebody like this who wants to come back to the program?
I would love to know the answer to that, too. Hey, meanwhile, Enrique Ortiz had a question that's been brought up on the show before. He mentions on Twitter and X, with College Football 25 releasing this summer, is it possible you guys can do a segment where you simulate UTEP football games?
We've got to do a lot more than that. I was thinking about that. We've got to think of a whole rollout once the game actually comes out. And I was even telling some of the brass back here, it's time to develop the 600 ESPN El Paso Twitch stream so we could do it after hours and play some NCAA football after hours and stream it.
So here's my question, okay? If I reach out to EA and the College Football 25 design team, do you think that they would want to partner with us on a simulation week by week for the games based on their models and how things work? Or is simulated games simply based on who plays it here from a design standpoint? How does the simulation work is my question.
Okay, so the way that the simulation would work, it's simple. Anybody could do it. We could do it on our PS5 or the Xbox, whatever game system that we're going to use, and we literally just put a UTEP schedule. We simulate the season, so you're not going to play as a user.
Right.
You're going to let the computer play itself, but you're going to watch all of it happen and see what the record is when it's all said and done.
So what you're telling me is that you can't do a week-by-week simulation. Can you do a week-by-week simulation where you actually input the previous week's scores before you simulate the next week?
Yes. So, yeah, you could have that in the pipeline. It would be a little difficult when the season actually kicks off. So the idea is to do it before the season actually starts to see what the computer would guess UTEP to, do in these games.
Okay, because I was like,
they're not going to update the season week by week based on, how your team is doing and stuff like that. They do that for Madden, for sure, and they do that for 2K as well. So, like, right now, I could hop on 2K. All the players that are currently on the Raptors who weren't there before, like RJ Barrett,
yes,
he was on the Knicks, he will now be on the Raptors. They update it very often. College sports does not update until the end of the season.
Okay,
or at least so they used to not do that.
Yeah, I do wonder if maybe, well, here's the funny thing, is that with guys going in the portal and things like this, I wonder how advanced College Football 25 will be.
Yeah, so then that's why they'll want you to buy 26, College Football 26, and then you'll just buy that one, and you'll get all the new transfer portal guys from that offseason.
Instead of updates.
Yeah, and what you could do, so you could create your own player, you could have him be at UTEP, you could have him go out and try to win the Heisman and do all that kind of stuff. At least that's how they did it in the College Football 14 game, and they made it really user-friendly. So the simulated model, the simulated game idea, that's all very possible with this upcoming video game coming out.
All right. We got time for one last segment. It'll be our final countdown heading into the weekend. We'll do that next. Stay with us. Sports Talk continues. 600 ESPN El Paso.